Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life, because what it takes to write the book you want to write is also what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life and video interviews with some of the best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. You can find Author Magazine at authormagazine.org. And, well, we're funded by the wonderful Pacific Northwest Writers Association, which has been supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. Every year, the PNWA hosts an outstanding writers' conference here in the Seattle area, Puget Sound area, doing another one, another good one this year. And, well, I'll be teaching there. I'll be teaching a Fearless Writing Masterclass. I'll be teaching a class on fearless marketing, or I also call it marketing for authors who hate to market, which is almost every author I know. And I'll also be teaching a class on this personal essay, a favorite of mine. Donald Moss will be there doing his writing a breakout novel workshop. Oh, so many opportunities. I encourage you to check it out if you are anywhere in the Northwest or would like to make the journey even. It is probably worth it. You can learn more at PNWA.org. Well, I've been looking forward to this conversation for a while since I booked this interview with today's guest, Ellen Tadd. Ellen is an internationally known clairvoyant counselor, educator, and author who has been teaching and counseling for more than 40 years. My God. She is widely respected for the integrity of her work, the accuracy of her perceptions and guidance, and the clarity and usefulness of her teaching. She is the author of four books, including The Infinite View, which just came out recently, and which I had the pleasure to read, The Wisdom of the Chakras, and Death and Letting Go, which appeared on the Boston Globe bestseller list. Oh, I can't wait to talk to her, so let's just do it. Ellen, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Bill. I just love your enthusiasm.
Ah, you know why I have enthusiasm, Ellen?
Why?
Do you know why? Because I love what I do. I just love it.
Well, I feel like your enthusiasm is wonderful. It must spread.
I try to. I was just talking to my producer, RJ, about this, and I believe I spent a long time being very ambitious and getting nothing done. And I stopped focusing on ambition, and I started focusing on my work as service. And when I did that, things started happening. And so I try to spread what is useful to me to other people. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's a wonderful piece of advice for everyone.
Well, and I'll tell you, part of the reason I wanted to have you on this show is one of the things that began to change is I found some of the, you know, I'm a writer. That's sort of what I do. Although I write in the world of personal essays, spirituality, that sort of thing. But I wrote fiction for a while. But there's a lot of books on writing, and but the best guidance I got, I found, in terms of what I really needed to learn to do this, live this creative life, was from spiritual teachers, people who would not be considered writing teachers, but spiritual teachers. And I found the view, the infinite view, which is really what it was, I felt these teachers offered, was the most helpful in guiding my professional life, really my whole life, but my professional life, which is where I'd struggled the most. And it had nothing to do with craft or business or anything like that, but just the way, sort of, what life looks like beyond the physical.
Yes,
which is
how we actualize our lives.
That's right. How it works. How it actually works. And so let's start here. Ellen, you are an interesting person for a number of reasons, but one is that you have really spent most of your life fully aware of two realities, essentially, although they're one reality, but they sort of are two realities. Would that be a fair description?
Yes. Seeing the human condition and the spiritual reality and how they interface.
Yeah. And this began super young when you had no idea what was happening.
Yes, I feel very fortunate because my spiritual awakening happened when I was 19. So I really never had any other job. I mean, you know, I worked as a waitress for a little while, but essentially my whole life's work of being a clairvoyant and helping people answer fundamental questions such as who am I, why am I here, what is the purpose of my life, you know, I've been involved with those fundamental questions for all of my adult life. And my watershed event was that my mother came back and talked to me after she died, and she had a very difficult life, and she came back to explain that she had chosen it to learn compassion and really gave me a rebirth and helped me to see that there's reasons why things transpire as they do.
It's a big shift, isn't it, when you go to from looking at life as some just bunch of crap that happens to you to you, the words you used were interesting, the words she used was justice, but she means that not in terms of punishment, which is normally how we think of judgment sort of here on Earth, but the order to things, that it wasn't random.
Yes. Well, the way I think of that word is I do believe in reincarnation. I do believe in cause and effect. And so our actions have either a negative or a positive impact. And so we're all here to learn and we're all here to evolve. And so the idea that anyone gets away with anything is just not true.
Yes. One of my favorite teachers, her name's Louise Hay, she said, you should be honest down to the last paperclip,
always say, not if you're hiding Jewish people in the attic in a Nazi regime.
No.
Why I tend to use the word attunement. That attunement is situational awareness, and so what is right in one situation is wrong in another, and that the process of developing awareness to discern appropriateness is really key, because sometimes the wisest thing you can do is lie.
Right. You know, I love that you said that, and you know, you might have heard at the beginning of the show, I said what it takes to write the book you want to write is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. And I do believe that. And part of the way I have learned attunement is through writing, because the right word for me, the right sentence for me, would not be the right sentence for somebody else. I am trying in the course of writing to find what I think of as the effortless path, which is, in the language you've just used, the attuned path. And for each person, it's going to be different, and for each story it's going to be different, for each essay it's going to be different. So you have to tune into a kind of inherent truth that story already possesses. That's how I frame it for myself. Does that make...
Yes, it sounds like the creative process. It sounds wonderful.
Well, that's what it is. And so, all right, so you know, you're clairvoyant, and I have never had a problem with – I remember I was watching a medium. She was on television. She was very good, you know. She was very funny. And I was listening to her, and some of the times people have problems with mediums and clairvoyants because they spend a certain amount of time searching as they question and talk to people, and things come into clarity for them. And I have never had a problem with that, because I listened to this one medium talking to this client, and I thought, God, she sounds just like what I sound like when I'm trying to find a story. Because when I'm trying to write something, I feel like I'm listening to something and trying to hear it correctly. And it seemed like the two processes were in some ways linked, that what I listen to when I write is not dissimilar maybe to what people who call themselves clairvoyants or mediums are listening to when they translate. Is that possible?
Well, in my book, The Infinite View, I emphasize deep listening and deep focus. And I make a distinction between them So the deep listening is one way to access attunement, and deep focus is another. And sometimes you actually put them together, just like we put together listening and using our physical eyes. But
right.
I tend to use the word clairvoyant for me because I'm very visionary. When I work with a client, and I learned this when I was 19, that I looked into a person's hand and I started to see a movie in my mind's eye of that person's past lives and aspects about their nature. So clairvoyance seemed to be the right term because I wasn't trying to figure it out. It wasn't so much a listening, it was vision. So this is where there are a variety of ways to access attunement, and I certainly value deep listening. But when I work with clients, primarily what I'm seeing is vision.
But when that happens, Ellen, doesn't it require on your part an allowance? Because I think you could shut it down. I mean, I'm sure it comes very strong, and there are times where it overtakes you. But isn't there something required on your part to allow it to keep going, to trust it, and I guess believe in it, so that that movie you're watching actually plays out, as opposed to questioning it? Because it seems to me if you questioned it, the whole thing would kind of go haywire. But maybe that's not how it works.
Well, definitely, it can be shut down. You know, as a child, I saw faces in the dark, and I saw light around people, and my father was a physicist, a scientist, and he thought I had a vivid imagination. And so as I grew older, I did shut it down because I felt like something was probably wrong with me, that I was having these experiences. So it then got reawakened with the experience with my mother when I was 19. So I actually think that lots of children have clairvoyant and clairaudient experiences because they're, you know, when we're children, we're fresh from the spiritual realm. And so these sensitivities are very alert. And then we get conditioned in school and in being raised by our parents to look at life from only a material perspective. And so it changes. I watched this with my own children. My daughter had an imaginary play friend. Her name was Hana Peach, a little Japanese girl. And she could see auras, and she would draw them with her magic markers. But then she went off to school, and the other kids weren't talking about this. And so she shut it down. So I think it's not that unusual. But I felt fortunate that it got reawakened in me. And once it did, then I was all in. You know, I was curious. I still was raised by a scientist, so my approach to my experiences wasn't that I knew the truth. It was that I was having experiences, and I wanted to understand them, which is where meditation came in. And also, you know, I've had so many years and so many different experiences that I've accumulated a kind of conclusion from it and a body of knowledge that I teach and I share. But I always focus on helping my students have their own experiences and develop experiential knowing, because I think it's through experiential knowing that we feel confident. Otherwise, we're just repeating someone else's ideas.
That's right. I agree 100%. And, you know, I'm a teacher too, but I've learned that all the experience is really the only teacher, I think, but that as a teacher, I tell a story to help people interpret experiences they've had in the creative experience, in this case, in the process of writing and being creative, and to help them understand those experiences and then let them go back and learn on their own. But nothing can teach you like experience, nothing. I don't think it's even. We can tell good stories though that can help. That can help each other understand, which is a lot of what you do in this book. For instance, talk about You talked about my enthusiasm. Talk about positivity, because I think one of the biggest changes for me was embracing my own inherent positivity that I'd sort of tamped down as a young man and then finally let bloom as I got older. But talk about positivity.
Okay. Yes. So, let me just say, after that experience with my mother, I started having experiences with guides and teachers from the spiritual world. And so they have been my fundamental teachers in my philosophy and in developing my own experiences. So one of the things that a guide has said is positivity is our greatest protection. When we're positive, literally our aura gets brighter, bigger, and that my guides define positivity as attitudes based in spiritual principles. Attitudes are a combination of thoughts and feelings. And attitudes that are spiritual principles, attitudes that are loving, attitudes that are wise, attitudes that are creative, attitudes that are balanced, you know, there's an array of them. Negativity are attitudes not based in spiritual principles. So hate or jealousy or competition or turmoil. So the process of cultivating positive attitudes is something that I was taught to work on very early in my process. And I often think of it as a tennis game. So we have a negative attitude and it's coming at us. We can hit it back with an antidote. And so the process of really training our minds that we don't have to be a victim of our own attitudes, we can cultivate positive attitudes. And this is something that changes how we perceive, changes how we feel. So in my chapter on positivity, I talk about three tools. One is the power of inspiration, that inspiration opens the crown chakra and the chakra system. It gives us access to the spiritual world. It makes us feel glad to be alive. And it's so important to identify what inspires us. And the second is the power of affirmation as a tool. I have used affirmations when I walk, when I exercise, when I'm in the shower, as a way to train the mind and to undo negative conditioning. And then the third is the attitude of newness, recognizing that at any moment there's change in the next moment, that nothing is ever stagnant. And we tend to get caught in old thoughts. And so I love the affirmation, I'm filled with newness. And to sustain the attitude of newness in my perception, in my relationships, that recognizing that who you knew yesterday, a person you knew yesterday, is not necessarily the exact same person today.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I've been writing these more or less daily little essays for my magazine for years. And I always say I write about the exact same thing, which is fear not. Like, that's all I say 1,000 times. But you'd say, well, how can you do it 1,000 times? Well, every day I go to the page and I say, today, what is there to say about that? Because I in a day, I've learned something. Something in me has shifted. Every day something has shifted. And if I go honestly to the page, there is always something new. There's always something new to look at that same essentially subject of what is it to be fearless, really? What does it mean? And it's because of just what you said, that there is, but you have to trust that there is something new, that something has shifted. Something new can come.
Well, I think it just is true that that everything does shift, and the real challenge is to perceive it.
Yeah, and believe it. You know, for me, affirmations never sort of worked for me, I guess you could say, for a while. But I liked the idea of it, but for some reason I wasn't connecting to it, you know. And then what made the shift for me on those was when I learned to not just – that the key for me was not saying the words but feeling what they meant while I said them. That without the felt – it's almost like an actor, you know. I used to do theater, and you couldn't just say the words that the character had been told to say. You had to feel them, or it wasn't authentic. You had to mean it. And I found that that was the missing piece for me in the act. And once I started doing that, I felt they really served their purpose. It was the felt belief in the affirmation that turned the corner for me on them.
And that's why I emphasize, absolutely, and that's why I emphasize that an attitude is a combination of thought and feeling. It's not just the thought. It's the thought and the feeling together.
Yeah. And, you know, what also I loved about this book is, and I feel this way myself, is early on, you were worried about trying to be the chosen one everybody was going to turn to, sitting up on a mountain with their legs crossed and everyone would come, and because you didn't want to be that. And even though you are a teacher, what you emphasize in this again and again is yourself as a student, as someone who's on a journey of learning. And you still feel that way now?
Absolutely. Every day. I think that part of the newness is that we're constantly evolving in our understanding and our learning. I certainly have certain convictions that have been consistent, but my ability to understand the nuance, my ability to understand how certain things that I've been taught apply to a greater variety of circumstance, you know, it's, I think that unless we continue to learn, we can't be as effective as teachers.
I agree. And I think it's the attitude of learning that keeps you humble as a teacher and keeps you sort of honest as a teacher.
Yes. Well, because we are learning, so it is honest.
Yeah. But don't you feel like, I mean, I know you've got your relationship with your guides, and, you know, that's although you teach, but that's also a private relation, or I guess private's the right word, the way writing is a kind of private thing, even though I share it. But I feel that I don't do as much teaching as I would like, because every time I do it, I feel like I learn so much in the teaching, that there is something about the students' questions, the students wanting to know something that I thought I knew, that I thought I could teach. It's their desire deepens, it's like a calling to me to deepen my understanding of it. Does it work that way with you?
Yes. I've been teaching for a long time, and it's always so interesting that someone comes up with a question that I've never thought of, or that I was never asked before, even though I've taught for so long. And I love that. I love the process of delving deeper or looking at something from a new perspective. And so it's what makes the process of teaching never get old.
Yeah. It is. And are you not surprised? Because there's one point in this book where your guide said, okay, I think it was compassion. They said, okay, we're going to learn compassion. And you said, well, I got that already. And they said, no. Now we're going to go even deeper. That when you think you've really understood something, and I felt this way myself, I'm not a super young guy, but there would be things I think I really get, and then something breaks and I go deeper again.
Exactly.
And every time I think I've got it, and then I go deeper again. There's something else.
Yeah, sometimes I think of these teachings as being titled Deeper and Deeper and Deeper.
There's no end. There's no end.
Well, once I had a being in the spiritual world who said, it is not that we're not still learning. It's our attitude about learning that makes us evolved. So it's, in other words, that, you know, when we make a mistake and we feel bad about ourselves. That's a very different attitude than making a mistake and being really enthusiastic about, oh, great, now there's something more for me to learn.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's true. One of the shifts I had to make was to stop believing in the concept of an old concept of success and failure, that there really is only, there's just simply learning. There's just learning, and you can call, because I have learned easily as much from those races I lost as a young man as the races I won. But I learned from the winning, too. But there's just learning, and that the concept of what we call success and failure is really, I think, a misperception. If there's,
yes,
you know,
I remember once I was told, Ellen, you can learn just as much from a poor lecture as you can from an excellent lecture.
Yeah, it's true.
Right?
Yeah.
So you move out of good, bad, right, wrong thinking. And
yeah.
In talking about positivity, I believe what turns even circumstances of great adversity into positivity is learning.
Absolutely. If you can accept this, I mean, for me, if I give a talk, it's the student who comes to me with a question that I can't really answer during the workshop, and that frustrates me. I feel like I really want to give it my all and give them the best that they've come for and so on and so forth. But then I spend weeks thinking about that question until and it's always, I grow so much from that. But at the time it happens, I feel just a little bit like I failed just a little bit, you know, because I didn't come through for him. But those are the ones that send me off. And I began to finally recognize that that happened often enough that I took it easy on myself when I couldn't nail every question, you know. But it took a little while.
So one of the tools that I teach is the activation of the third eye chakra. And the third eye chakra is really an important thing to understand, because actually I've been taught to live life looking through your forehead. When you open two eyes, open three. And I teach a technique, which now is called the TAT technique, which is comparison of perception from the gut, the solar plexus, with perception from the third eye in the middle of the forehead. And so when we're focused in the gut and things are not going as we want them to, we have a tendency to feel uncomfortable or self-conscious or sad or mad or hurt. But from the third eye, there's greater objectivity. There's an ability to sustain that positivity that we desire. And so I find that when we focus out of the third eye, then habits of reaction really just dissipate.
Yeah, and you really have to, like, literally lift your energy up there. You have to.
Yes.
Because obviously you don't physically have that third eye, but you have, there is, that's the best description I can have of it physically when I'm doing what I believe, when I've done what you are describing. My energy seems to come through my head.
Yeah, it's right through the middle of the forehead. And what activates it is focus and concentration. I mean, literally, you can be focusing on the corner of a picture frame or the end of a branch. And in sports, they call it the zone. When an athlete is deeply focused out of the middle of their forehead, they're not attached to winning and losing, and yet they perform their best. And
this is good, Ellen. This is good. Because it's good for me. It's helpful because it's something to remember. Where is my energy at that moment? Is it there or isn't it? Because you can ask yourself that.
And the quality of our experience is completely changed depending on where we're focused. I've done a lot of experimentation with this, and it's remarkable. People go from confused to clear. People go from anxious to calm. And now I have a student who's starting to bring this technique into elementary schools. And children go from, you know, all kinds of emotional turmoil to being wise sages. And my guides say focus and concentration is equal to power. And the skill of focus can be developed just like building a muscle.
Absolutely. But you have to know what it is you're doing. You have to understand that you can't, that you're that there, you have to know what it is you're doing, what you're focusing on, where, what you're paying attention to, what you're having to pay attention to.
I have a chapter in my book that really describes this. So I think I think it would be really helpful for a lot of people. I once was watching the evening news, and the anchor turned to a journalist and said, "What's your gut feeling on that?" And I thought, oh, there's one of my life purposes, to get the anchor to turn to a journalist and say, "What's the third eye view on that?"
Oh, my God.
Because,
you know, we've lived in a different world when you say that, when that happens.
Well, I mean, how long did it take for the idea of following your gut to get into our lexicon? Well, not that long. So I'm going to work to shift that, because I think following the gut has been a big mistake. I think that what I see is the gut area is responsible for addiction and anger, and it's not a bad center, but it's the most misused, because it's the center of emotion. It shouldn't be used as the center of perception or the center of decision making.
Right. I agree. I agree. Ellen, I could talk to you for a long time.
Thank you. You're fun to talk to, too.
I really enjoyed this. The book is The Infinite View, A Guidebook for Life on Earth, available wherever books are sold. Now, if people, because you're a teacher, you're a counselor, and I assume you give lectures and such, and you're on the East Coast, is that right?
Yes, I live in Boston.
Oh, I grew up in Rhode Island. I'm an old New Englander. I see you've got Giselle Bundchen on the back there. Maybe you're near Tom Brady back there. So my question to you is this. People are interested in your work, would like to work with you. What should they do?
I have a website. It's simply my name, ellentadd.com.
Mm-hmm.
And so from my website, people can find my Facebook page. There's also contact information. And
do you work through, like, Skype if they want to, if they can't come to Boston?
I work over the phone a lot.
Okay.
I do work nationally and internationally, so sometimes I work on Skype. But because I'm a visionary, a lot of times I prefer to work over the phone rather than Skype, because I'm looking into the air, you know?
Right. I got it.
Okay.
All right. So if someone's interested, Ellen Tadd, and if they're a little shy about that, they can always go buy the book, and it's excellent. I highly recommend it. Ellen, thank you so much for coming on the show.
My pleasure. It was great talking with you.
All right. Well, take it easy.
Thank you. You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now. Bye. All right, everybody. Use that third eye. You use it when you're right. You do. You need your emotion, but you need that third eye. The third eye is how you see your story, I believe. I do believe so. I think it's what I'm looking at when I'm writing. Well, I will be back next week talking to Lisa McDonald, host of Fearless Living. In the meantime, go do something you love with somebody you love. If you do, you can't go wrong.